The models, the tools, the implementations, everything is moving so incredibly fast. But one thing that is very interesting, one trend that I've been seeing, is that the open source benchmarks are moving and improving just slightly faster than the closed source alternatives. The day may come where the open source models are the best models and the ones with the greatest number of tools, the largest variety of implementations, because naturally they're open and available for everyone to work on. There have been numerous new developments on running models more efficiently, running larger models on even smaller devices, and doing so with less power and computational overhead, as well as a new advancement in one of my favorite open source models, which may just be a big leap forward for how these are going to evolve moving forward. And that is what today's episode of AI Unchained is all about. A big leap for local LLMs. What is up, guys? Welcome back to AI Unchained. I am Guy Swan, and this is the show where you are going to stay up on what is happening in the AI space and specifically for the open source and sovereign tools. And I wanted to do something differently. I wanted to start something because I actually have a thread. I have a thread with my brother, actually, but I also just have a Telegram channel that's just an easy way to save a bunch of stuff in order. And I've actually been keeping track of a lot of the things that I'm finding interesting or like big developments that are happening in AI. And I realize I kind of space it out and talk about it on the show, but I should actually have like a section of that we should start the episodes out. And I'm just going to kind of go through a bunch of the things that I found interesting or that were big developments that I think that were interesting to me that I think are really impactful. So one of the things in particular I've been trying to keep my eye on is running LLMs on smaller devices. And there's been a handful of really interesting things in the context of like new chips that are designed to far more efficiently run specifically for LLMs. Like, I actually think this is something that we'll see more and more frequently is the Apple Vision and the Microsoft HoloLens and a lot of these VR and AR devices are making chips that are specialized, that basically their circuitry and their design is built for spatial computing, very much like the GPU. And it's the exact same idea, is that graphics is just that much more efficient on the GPU because they redesigned the chip to work with a certain type of information, a certain type of computation, so to speak. Whereas the CPU is a very great general processing unit, but we're getting closer and closer to quote-unquote ASICs, to application-specific integrated circuits. For anybody who, you know, knows Bitcoin, you're getting closer to specialized chips for specialized jobs. And I think LLMs are going to be so deeply embedded in all of this that I think it is inevitable that the next couple of generations of devices will just have some sort of an LLM chip start to be built in. There's going to be a massive shift in how these things work. And HoloLens has a CPU, a GPU, and then a HPU, as they call it, a holographic processing unit. And while the Apple Vision has the CPU, GPU, and then I think they call it the RPU or something. I can't remember what it is, but it's a spatial processing unit. And I think that will become the norm in those because there is so much, there's just heavy amounts of computation. And, you know, with their unified memory model, they can get it incredibly efficient for the offloading of computation and data. And then I think we're going to add another one to the mix of LLM chips or of not necessarily LLMs, not language models, but the weighted models, AI models and all their types. Like, how can you build a circuit, a chip that is far more efficient at running those? So barring that, which I think is a longer term process, there's also been a lot of like just techniques, just new ways of using data. And another one that I really want to do an episode on because I want someone on to talk about it, but they're crazy busy, is Mojo, which is purely a software side thing that gives huge like incredible, like almost hard to believe advantages in efficiency and power when it comes to running Python and the Python transformers and things. And what it does is, because Python's such a high level language, it's like super bloated, like really inefficient, and it doesn't, there's just a lot between Python and the actual hardware. Whereas if you build something in C++, it's going to be far, far faster. Like a great example actually is Whisper. Whisper is the AI subtitles, it's speech to text model that I have on my computer and I use in fact, there's a video on it on YouTube. I keep forgetting that I didn't publish an episode about this on the feed, but I have an app that I built with Whisper and FFmpeg, and it's basically a simple little script, and what it does is it creates a subtitle file and a transcript file automatically for any video or audio that I drop on top of the icon, and it uses Whisper. But I use the C++ version of Whisper, and the comparison between that and the Python version was nuts. Like, the Python version took like 10 minutes for a 3-minute video, whereas the Whisper version took like 20 seconds for a 3-minute video. Like, it would, the difference was profound. Like, I was like, holy crap. And the Mojo programming language is that how you would refer to it? I don't know. Basically, it's a layer between Python and the base hardware of your device that essentially does translating, such that it just makes Python vastly, vastly more efficient when you're running the transformer and the AI type computation. And I believe they even said that in many cases, it's actually better than the advantage you get from writing it in C++, but I could be, I don't know, they were literally talking like 100x and like 500x when you kind of stack the different ways that you can make this more efficient, both in the installer, in the running of it, or excuse me, the compiler, and then actually running it. And these huge advantages compound on each other. So that's a big software method, but there's even RAM techniques, which this will be really interesting to see how this goes on desktop computers, is what do you do with the memory? And recently Apple released a paper called, hold on a second, I've got it right here. LLM in a Flash, Efficient Large Language Model Inference with Limited Memory. So this is about how do you run a language model locally on a phone. And there are two main papers that I was saving on this. And one of them mostly just talks about quantization, is how do you compress essentially these models enough that you can run them on small amounts of hardware. But what the Apple paper, I think, was far, far more substantial in its mechanisms of being far more efficient. And what they were actually, of course, you can quantize these models. And I don't mean to make light of the other paper, which is titled A Performance Evaluation of a Quantized Large Language Model on Various Smartphones. And they do a lot of different things for like pruning and quantization just to compress it so that it works on a smartphone. And they used the Orca Mini version 3 7 billion parameter model. And this is a Llama 2 model based on the Orca data set. And the 7 billion parameter models are pretty good. They're not incredible. They're not fascinating, and they're not going to be the best things, especially for like code and stuff, unless you have one specifically designed around writing code. They're going to be very, very sort of generalist LLM. But if they have access to data, if they have access to information on your phone and you are running them locally, there are a lot of things that you can do with a 7 billion parameter model that is really, really powerful. It's just that the things that I have been using them for most, which is building small applications and stuff. And in fact, like, that's what I spent a lot of yesterday doing instead of finishing out this episode, was I was building out my workflow app for making it so I can double click and all of the things that I need for this show are basically in one big motion, all formatted properly. They have the right naming conventions. The folders are created. The archive folder is created. The project file and the project template are created in the notes file and the notes template and all of that stuff. Like, how do I do that into one big thing? And I had done that for Bitcoin Audible, but I hadn't done it for AI Unchained. And it had made this show feel sluggish, and it was driving me crazy. So I feel much, much cleaner in the setup and execution of this show now. And what's funny is it only took me a few hours to really kind of get it all in order. And most of that was just kind of properly building out my template and how I wanted to name stuff. It actually wasn't even in the coding, which I did pretty quick with a combination of Mixtral and ChatGPT, which Mixtral is actually what I want to talk about in this show after we get through the news piece of this, because that is one, this is my new favorite local run model. It is incredibly powerful, and there's a really key reason why. So hold that in the back of your mind. We will come back to it in a minute. So going back to what Apple has figured out, this is really, really interesting, because what they are doing is they're using flash memory. So every device, all of the computer devices have a hierarchy of memory. You've got your non-volatile and your volatile. So RAM is everything that's running like right now. Like right now I have my Logic program open and I'm recording. And if I shut down my computer and open it back up, that won't be there. Logic won't be open, and what I was recording won't be there. That's because it's all held in RAM. The stuff that I'm doing active on my machine, you know, when you shut it down and you open it back up, aside from the fact that it tries to do like this indexing thing and keep track of all the programs that you have and everything, tries to do an automatic save and everything, it's trying to write to permanent memory, to non-volatile memory all the time, so that you lose as little as you possibly can. But everything in RAM, as soon as you take power away from it, is gone. That is why you have non-volatile. You have hard drive, SSD, flash memory. Take power away from it, it stays right where it is, and you can recall it later. You can take a hard drive out, put it in somewhere else. You know how all that works, but those are just the designations. The problem is, obviously, is hard drive memory is incredibly slow. RAM is incredibly fast. It's really easy to move and change tons of information in RAM, like crazy, crazy fast. Whereas hard drives take a long time to, you know, you ever transfer a gigabyte file, that takes some time. However, flash memory, SSD memory, is getting far, far faster than it ever has been, especially in the mobile devices, because they don't really have a choice. So it's been incredibly optimized, because SSDs are just they're the smaller, they're the lighter, they're the faster and far more energy efficient form of storage. So when you have these small devices, that's basically the only option. And then also the way that they have been, rather than having the drive separate, but like these things like basically immediately, like tied immediately into the board, like they're basically just soldered on, and there's like tons and tons of pins. It basically looks like a chip on the phone body inside the device. You get far, far better read and write speeds, because you're not plugging in by USB-C or just like a plug, you know, at the end of the thing. Like the entire hard drive basically can be written to. So what Apple is doing by running these LLMs, or trying to optimize running local LLMs on your phone so that you can actually get the best possible performance from something locally hosted, so that you can still use this thing, so you can basically use Siri without an internet connection, is by offloading everything that's not immediately necessary in the RAM off to flash storage. Because when you're loading a model, you basically load a ton of the weights, but you don't need, you load the entirety of the model into RAM, but you don't need all of it at any one point. You only need some of the weights. So what happens is that you can load the entire thing up and then write what is not immediately needed to the hard drive, use the weights, use the connections and the information of the language model that are needed right now for this next sentence or this next paragraph. And then when you realize you don't need those specific tools anymore, you can stick them back on the hard drive and pull the other tools that you need for this next section, the next tokens, pull it back out and start using and start running again. So it's kind of like a chef that doesn't have very much space to work with on like a countertop, right? And so rather than pulling out all the tools, you need a knife, you need a slicer, you need a grater, you need a mixer, you need all of these things, right? Like he needs like 50 tools. Well, when they're doing the recipe, they don't need them all at once. They first need the knife to just cut up a bunch of stuff. Then they get out the meat, and that's when they need the slicer. Well, what it's doing is it's essentially tallying up all of the different tools it has, figuring out which it needs for which part of the recipe, and then it's pulling out just the knife to do all of the things with the knife, and then it puts the knife away, and it brings out the slicer, and then it does that, and then it puts the slicer away, and it brings out the mixer or the grater, whatever it is. And so you're just putting them back in the cabinet whenever you don't need them for explicitly where you are in the order of operations. And then you're pulling the tool out so that you always have a nice workspace and you're being as efficient as possible with this, what you have available. So it's not like hugely bogging down the device. But here's the crazy thing. This means that what this method has shown in the paper, by the claim of the paper, says that they can actually run models that are twice as big as the available RAM. So going back to the Orca 7 billion parameter model that's quantized in the other paper I was talking about, this means that you could run a 13 billion parameter model with the same device that was maxed out with a 7 billion parameter model. But it also gets a massive speed boost. Speed and efficiency boost by offloading what is not immediately necessary into flash, because you're having to keep all of this live. You need more energy to keep an entire subset of your GPU computing and all of your RAM live at any one moment. If you can cut that down to a smaller amount and hold it in non-volatile memory for a portion of time, they're actually able to achieve a 4 to 5x increase in inference speed on the CPU and 20 to 25 times faster on the GPU. So on both an iPhone or a Mac, like with an M1, they can bring down the latency of running the same models that we've been running by a huge factor. The paper specifically is using Falcon 7B, which was a really great model that I used for a while before I kind of switched over to some of the more recently released ones. But it's just really cool to see, and they actually have like a couple of other techniques too that I think just like get a little bit deeper to the point that I don't understand. One of the things they talked about is reusing activations. So when you do requests for weight loading, you're loading weights from the model. Apparently there's some sort of computation done with that, and the result is actually what you use, and somehow they are able to reuse whatever that thing is when you're doing with recent compute tokens. So they're basically ensuring that they're not having to redo computation that they've already done, and they use it for as much as they can for the process. But like I said, a lot of the paper was beyond my depth, so I'm translating what I could understand from it. But the point of this, what I think was most interesting about this development and why it was really exciting to me, is just to see, again, this is not like a fundamental software thing. We didn't like write an entirely new programming language like Mojo. All we did here, all Apple did, was figure out how to optimize, look at the computation that's being done and how this is being loaded, and realizing that we don't have to do the whole thing all at once. Okay, so what piece can we put to the side? It's like an aggressive, you know, like we had like incredible power saving techniques that went to mobile of like, okay, what needs to be stored in RAM, what needs to be active, what needs to be passive and in the background, and how many processes need to be running. And then for years and years and years, we perfected this, and the devices got more and more efficient and better at just operating incredibly quickly and incredibly responsively, and with large amounts of computation and using as little power as possible. There were multiple significant breakthroughs in how the operating systems made use of the hardware that made it more computationally and energy efficient. What we are doing here, what I want to point out is that we haven't done any of this for large language models. We haven't done any of this for AI. It's not been a consumer device. It's not been, or a consumer tool. It's not been something that we have talked about running locally on a Mac or on a phone until extremely recently. We just crossed 1 year in which this was in the public eye, that these models were something that normal people were downloading, using, diffusing images with, making movies on Pika.art or DALL-E or whatever it is. I want to stress that because I think that's hard to believe when you stop and think about it. We are just barely 1 year into this. It was November of last year or the year before. It's 2022 and we are, you know, days into 2024. Everything that you think about as having happened in this, or at least in my perspective, because this is when I was made aware of it, or really made aware of the power, how incredibly useful these tools could be, is that young. And that is just crazy to think about because the explosion of activity is nuts. And I think we're going to go through like that 10-year, 15-year cycle of figuring out how to be more and more efficient, except that these things are going to happen in 6 months, a year. It's essentially like catching up with Moore's Law for 20 years of missed application in a new software stack or in a new type of computation. And because I genuinely think about this as like a new type of software in and of itself. It's an entirely new way to think about operations and think about task completion in a computer environment. This is a paradigm shift in how we interact and how we are going to use computers, in my opinion. So anyway, I thought that was a really cool paper and definitely worth mentioning. I will have the link to both of the ones I referred to actually in the show notes if you kind of want to do your own digging. What I think this means is like right now I have a lot of models in LM Studio that I can't run, even though I have 64 gigs of RAM on my, I have a M1 Max Pro. No, yeah, Max. Max is the big one. And it lets me run a lot of models. That unified memory is magical stuff. But the really cool thing is I am going to be able to run a bunch of these models that say you don't have enough RAM right now. And a bunch of the ones, the larger ones or the quantized ones that are too slow, I'm going to be able to run 4 to 5, maybe even 10, 20, 25 times faster. And it'll probably just come in some, you know, update for LM Studio and the operating system in the next 6 months or so. And the capacity of what I can run locally is just going to explode. And that's before we start talking about things like Mojo and having a new software background or underlying software thing that, you know, basically allows the transformer to talk directly to the hardware, which, you know, maybe LM Studio or Ollama or GPT-4all, whatever, will implement these things, or maybe it'll just be another entirely new piece of software that runs these things, and you'll get yet another 5x, 10x, 100x, some of the things that these are actually being measured in, performance increase. You know, put this on a 3-year timeline, 5-year timeline, and also think about the context of these larger models aren't getting better at the increased size. You know, you can't just 5x the size of ChatGPT-5 and make it 5x better. You're only going to get it 20% better. The marginal returns are heavily diminishing the bigger you get. There's a point where after, you know, 100 billion, 300 billion parameters, that it just isn't worth the money to make it a trillion, 10 trillion billion, 10 trillion parameters. But it's just not going to be that much better. In fact, one of the early versions, early updated versions of ChatGPT, which they boasted about being like a lot bigger, a lot of people were saying wasn't even better. It was actually worse. And that is where you run the risk, is that if you increase your data set, but you actually end up on net diminishing the quality, after it already kind of understands all of the weights of the language, there's only so big you can make it before the loss in quality, because you can't actually sort through that just sheer ungodly amount of data. the responses actually go down because you're just mixing in low quality stuff with the high quality, highly curated data of a smaller subset. This episode is brought to you by Swan.com. Swan Bitcoin is the place to buy Bitcoin, set up a long-term savings, set up your vault, set up your financial foundation for your Bitcoin exposure to, you know, they now have the Swan IRA, which you can get in both traditional and Roth versions, so that within your retirement account, you can allocate to Bitcoin tax-free. They have Swan Business, which lets you put in an employee plan, like a benefits package, and hold Bitcoin on your treasury. They have Swan Private for the concierge service. They have tons and tons of resources for how to hold your own keys and how to understand the value of Bitcoin in the long-term perspective and why you absolutely need to be allocating, even if it's just 1%, 5%. The numbers just don't lie. It is the lowest risk, highest return allocation that you can get. If you do not, it is far riskier to not have a small allocation to Bitcoin. If you are not allocated to Bitcoin, you should be worried. And Swan can give you all of the resources that you need to allocate properly and to work within your comfort and knowledge level and expand that where it is most important. If you go to swan.com/guy, you will find my special link and everything that you need to get started in getting a portion of your life allocated to Bitcoin so that you do not miss a major part of our future. Check them out, swan.com/guy. The link is right in the show notes. So this is something that I've talked about earlier on in the show, and this is one of the reasons that I started the show, is because I was fascinated by that. It's reminded me so much of a lot of what I understood and have explored in economics, of this diminishing marginal return and thinking about what the economics of everything are what dictate the reality. And if you understand the economics of these models and you understand the economics of the computation, I think you can, without being able to predict any single event or some time frame or anything, you can predict the future of how these things are going to progress. And Brian Ramelli has shared a really great chart the other day, I think it's like maybe a week or two ago, of the performance, the benchmarks of the open source, the major open source models versus the closed source models. And the most important takeaway was that the open source models were steeper. They obviously, the performance was not as good, and generally the open source models are smaller models. They're 7 billion, 13 billion, maybe upwards of 34 billion parameters. And just because people don't have the hardware to run them, so they're less likely to do well or be popular if, you know, 95% of the people who are interested in it can't actually run it on their machine. But there is a Yi model recently that's actually got a 34 billion parameter base model, and I believe that one just came up. That one's on 01.ai. This is one that I haven't really tried out much, but it's one in my list of the most recent things to check out, and I'm not even sure. I've been so downloading so much stuff. Do I even have room on this freaking computer right now? I swear to God, 2 terabytes is just gone and so fast. Especially 65 gigabytes of 2 terabytes left. Okay, well, I can download a 20 gigabyte model. Let's do the 5K. This will be 24 gigabytes. And I'm going to do this 34 billion parameter. So I want to play around with this one. But back to the chart. The open source models are progressing in benchmarks faster than the closed source one. In fact, the only one that's actually an outlier on that chart, which is surprising, is ChatGPT. But I think there's a reason, there's a very specific reason why. And that is actually what this show is about, because ChatGPT has been keeping it secret, it seems. I've read a handful of articles about this, about people speculating why ChatGPT and GPT-4 has done such a good job at getting better performance than a lot of the other proprietary and closed source models, and what was their secret. And I saw some people speculating that it was something, and it was referred to as a mixture of experts. And I actually talked about this with Hope, who is a guy we will probably be doing shows with, because I've been building with him for quite some time. on some projects, and he's actually a developer, and he's been going down the AI rabbit hole kind of with me and our Keat group. And so I think what we are going to do is actually start doing little projects on building small things, because I'm not a developer and he is. There's a lot of really great conversation back and forth between him and I on how to put stuff together. And because he just has a perspective that I obviously don't have. And I am in love with building these little single purpose applications for myself. So it'll be interesting. What can we build in just like an hour or two when we kind of put our heads together and we are using AI? And that's kind of the series that we want to create. It'll be just kind of like a building with AI series. And, you know, maybe I'll call it something different, but I think that's a good starting way to think about it. But he actually did some machine learning in college and learned some things. And he didn't actually know that it was referred to this, but he was also kind of aware of the mixture of experts concept. And apparently, because one of the first articles I read about this was back in like July. So it was like right around the middle of the summer. And I don't think it was known entirely yet that this was the case, but I think it's basically... it's officially known now. I don't know where it got leaked, but I've also read articles since then that say this is what ChatGPT does. So I feel like the information just got out at some point and people were aware of it. But it's funny how much this aligns with the thesis of this show and some of the things I talked about from kind of an evolutionary and economic standpoint previously, and with other guests that we've had on the show, with like Bonsall and Jeff Booth. And the idea of specialization is that the reason the market works is because of hyper-specialization and interworking with people who can have very high fidelity in a very small or very narrow domain. And this apparently is the secret to ChatGPT, is that you are not actually talking to one giant model. You are talking to an agent that is deciding what model to use. And there are a plethora of smaller, highly specialized models in which it is picking two or three of them to work together in order to produce an answer, and then the agent is refining it and making sure that it gives the best result back to you. And this was the entirety, this is what I've talked about so much, is that we're going to have an ecosystem of models on top of models, models organizing different models and figuring out which models to use and how to use them in order to complete the task. It will be an environment of LLMs, an environment of these modeling systems completing tons and tons of different tasks. And because of that, ChatGPT is actually well above, or at least significantly enough that you can see it on the chart in their benchmarks, than the other closed source models. And I think this is probably one of the biggest differentiators. And what just dropped, like, I don't even know, a week ago now, maybe 4 or 5 days, very, very recently, the Mistral guys, which one of the, I think in the previous episode, two episodes back, on running locally, running the LLMs locally. My favorite model at the time, and I think that's the one that I actually shared on the show, was a Mistral model. I've been a big fan of the performance of those. And they didn't release it with any fanfare. They didn't give any explanation or anything. They literally dropped a single tweet with no context and a torrent file, like just a torrent metadata, a web link. So I downloaded it, and their version, or the naked version of it, was like 93 gigabytes. But the one LM Studio, like in no time at all, had a version of it with the bloke. I'm not sure how this whole setup even works, but the bloke is apparently a collector of many of the models, or a source for hosting it on Hugging Face. And the Mistral model was, the new Mistral model was up there as well. So I just downloaded it through LM Studio and used it that way. But so what this is, it's called Mistral 8x7b. And what this is referring to is it's a model with 7 specialized models within it and 1 agent model that is being used to decide which specialized model to use for which task. and I believe it selects, I think, I can't remember if I read this about ChatGPT. I'm 90% sure I read this about Mixtral. Is that, and yes, by the way, I am saying those two things. Mistral, M-I-S-T-R-A-L, is the set or the series of models, whatever you want to call it. And Mixtral, M-I-X-T-R-A-L, is the one that is the combination of multiple models. But simply put, this is a really good model. And like I was saying, though, is that I'm 90% sure that it will use any two of the specialized models inside of it, so to speak, to complete whatever task, and it will simply decide which two are the best two to complete the job with the most accurate or most useful answer. But this just goes in line with the thinking that the better improvement is going to come from high quality models that are really specialized, and in taking advantage of them in a sort of economic way, where you're getting these models, you're kind of trading the best, where the computation is going to best serve the use case or the task or problem that you're trying to solve. And what ends up happening is that you get far better answers with a far smaller and more efficient model and degree of computation. And so one of the things that I did over Christmas, I always like to give one particular, like, big or special or kind of group present or something. And I've always been kind of a dork, and I'll do the scavenger hunt things with my wife. And this year, one of the things that I did with the scavenger hunt was I made a simple cipher. And a cipher is just a way to encode. It's just a text replacement. So, like, imagine you swap, like, you know, you have the number five. And so any letter that you have, you swap with the next fifth letter down. So A is replaced with F. L is replaced with Q. You know, just simple, very simple substitution cipher. And the one that I did was I just reversed the alphabet. So A is replaced with Z, B is replaced with Y, C is replaced with X, D, W, et cetera, et cetera. And then I didn't give any indication as to what that was, and I would just put one word on each one of the clues that corresponded with the answer. And then she and her sister, my sister-in-law, pieced it together. Wasn't super hard, but I did have to encode one of the entire clues. And then a key, you know, an individual key on each one of the things so that they had something to go by, and then they could, you know, put 7 or 10 of the letters together and then realize what the connection was and fill in all the blanks. They did a pretty good job with it. But I built it with ChatGPT and Mixtral. And I actually was using it because this is when I found the Mixtral model. I decided I'd actually use it as a test to see how both completed the job. And then I also talked to Hope about this as well, because I was curious about one little quirk about Mixtral, and he thinks it's because of how it was probably trained, just that the data was labeled. But I'll get to that in just a second. So I got ChatGPT to do it for me. One of the first things I tried actually was, does the LLM actually, can I actually build an entirely new model? You know, essentially a cipher is a way of changing what they think the relationship between letters are into a completely different relationship and then adopting that new relationship. And it failed. I kind of suspected it would, but it failed pretty miserably, and it just printed out gibberish. And I'm glad I checked it too, because the first like 3 or 4 letters were correct, but the rest of it was just nonsense, and the cipher had nothing to do with the original writing. So I started out by saying, I want to create a cipher. I said, yes, sure, we can do that. I said, okay, well, can you encode this sentence by swapping each letter with the reverse in the alphabet? That is what it could not do. So instead, I said, okay, well, can you write me a simple terminal script or a Python script that would accomplish this task? And I will say also, by the way, ChatGPT and Mixtral, 8x7b, both failed at the original task. In fact, ChatGPT got more letters right before it fell into nonsense. And Mixtral, I think, got like two letters. And I don't think either one of them was much. I think ChatGPT was like four or five, and Mixtral was like two. So I said, okay, well, which one will write the better script? So I did it with ChatGPT, and it gave me 20 lines of code, real simple little Python script, and I executed it. And the way that script ran is that I would actually have to open the script in my editor, my script editor, and there was a specific spot in the code that said, this is the text to encipher, and it said equals quotation mark example quotation mark. And so when I read it, it literally just encoded the word example. It said, here's the word, and then here's the encoding. And obviously the script worked. It did encode the word properly, but I had to go into the script and edit it with the sentence and then the word and then save it again and then re-execute it again. So it was a bit clunky for how I actually used it. And I specifically did not want to iterate at all. I wanted to just see basic, straight out the gate, if I asked it to build me this simple one-use or single-use application, what would it build? And so then I went to LM Studio on my own machine, and I ran this on Mixtral to see what it would build me. And it made me a small Python script that did the same thing with 16 lines of code. And when I ran it, it actually, I didn't have to edit the script or anything at all. It gave me a little prompt window asking what I wanted to encode, and I would just type whatever it is, and then it would give me the result. So what was funny is the Mixtral app, the Mixtral default of just, I asked it the exact same question verbatim, it gave me a far more user-friendly application to run. With one odd caveat, is that it wrote the word Python at the beginning of the script. So the first time I tried to run it, it gave me an error because Python isn't actually part of the script. If I execute it with, you know, Python 3 space and then just drop the file in there, it gives me back an error. And I knew after reading the error that it was because Python was written at the beginning of the script. So that 16 lines of code actually needed to be 15 lines of code because the first line was just getting in the way of stuff. And rather than, and I deleted it and tested it and everything worked fine. But tons of people who used it may have had no idea what the error meant or what they should do. So I was like, okay, well, let me just feed the error back into Mixtral and just see what it says, giving it no context in the sense of, like, you know, don't tell it to get rid of Python at the beginning of the script. Just give it the error and see what it does. And the weird thing is it acknowledged the problem, but then gave me back the code with Python still written at the beginning. And that's when I asked earlier today, Hope TS, the developer guy that I work with, I asked him out of curiosity if he had any ideas, and he thinks it may be a quirk in the labeling of Python code that it's trained on, that might actually be something that occurs whenever I create Python code. But I haven't explored it enough. I haven't played with it enough to see how, if I can correlate it to anything specific. So I'm going to play around with it a lot more, but I've done a bunch of different tasks with this one, and I'm really, really loving this model. It's great with summarizing things. It's great with pulling stuff out of large amounts of text. It's really great with building these little things like this. Again, I was very happy with that one. And I also used it to help fix some of the things in my the code that I had for my AI Unchained project, like start a project app or workflow. So I'm going to play around with it a whole lot more, but I will have the link in the show notes so that you can check it out. This is a really, really good model, and I'm excited to see this. This is also, I think it's got a context length, or at least the details that I was finding about it said that it has a context length of 32,000, which that has been a big part of the limitations that generally are on a local model or running one locally. And I haven't tinkered with that enough to know exactly how to apply it, because LM Studio literally has an explicit context length. Like mine says 2048 right now, so just 2000, but it also lists the model and it said supports up to 32,768 tokens. So I'm not sure if that's something that I manually add. I don't think I have explored the program enough to really know all of the optionality there. I've mostly just kind of run the default on a lot of different models just to kind of get a sense and play around with stuff. But going back to that chart of the open source models, I think this is a pretty big step for how building the best open source models will kind of occur moving forward. And I highly suspect this will become kind of a standard of a group of specialized models being treated underneath the umbrella, working underneath the umbrella of an agent, of a base model that is deciding which one to use, which specialized instructor to complete the task with. And this will also, I think, be kind of the framework that will allow multimodality and the ability to do multiple different types of tasks and different types of models in one interface and one environment. So again, going back to the fact that we are only a year into this and so much is happening, I really think it's the base of this. The models and the new developments are moving far, far faster than any of this stuff can even be implemented. And that's why I think taking advantage of and trying to teach how to build with these things as fast as possible, even with the single-use applications, and kind of getting people in the mindset. Because one of the good things, one of the really cool things about learning something is, at least in my experience, one of my favorite ways to learn something is to take something that is broken and figure out how to fix it. So I feel like making sense of code and understanding how coding and programming works, there might actually be a really great way of exploring it in troubleshooting code that you have access to and that you can see, and figuring out how to fix it with the help of AI. So that is a direction that I want to take with the content on, specifically on YouTube and Rumble, since obviously it will be more video heavy, but we will be covering a lot of it on the audio versions as well, just for, you know, what makes sense. But I highly recommend going to check out YouTube and the Rumble channel so that you don't miss the Building with AI series. I think this is going to be immensely valuable, and I think this is kind of the perfect group to target, the perfect like category of task to target to get the absolute most value out of making sense of AI and how to use it. So with that, I will have the link to Mixtral. I will have the link to the papers that I mentioned. I will have a link to LM Studio. And also, if you want to play around with the model, not locally, you want to play around with it in just a website, there is po.com and then app.fireworks.ai. Both of these are links that I saved, and you can go ahead and I think unleashed.chat, actually. Unleashed.chat. I'll post that one up as well. This one's actually made by MVK and whoever he's working with. But it's really cool because you can actually give it documents and ask questions about it, and it will vectorize everything. This is actually a really, really interesting tool that I'm only very recently exposed to, but I'm interested to dig into that one as well. So I'll have that in the show notes so that you can play around as well. That's unleashed.chat. And then the app.fireworks with the model, there's a lot of different popular models that you can just kind of, again, play around with and have hosted. And the Mixtral under the text things, the Mixtral MOE, Mixture of Experts, that's like the first one actually in this. But if you want to do one where you don't have to sign in at all and you can just go ahead and just start playing and checking out how it works, po.com has a free chat right now to play around with Mixtral. So all of that great stuff, as well as our amazing sponsors, CoinKite, the makers of the Cold Card hardware wallet, and Swan Bitcoin, the best way to get allocated and learn about Bitcoin. Both of those will be right there in the show notes for your convenience. All right. I hope you guys enjoyed playing with AI this week. I hope I've given you a bunch of new tools to explore and new ways to be even more productive. Thank you so much for listening. Do not forget to subscribe and share this out with everybody you know that you want to be in the future with AI and not left behind. If you don't like the people, don't tell them. Don't tell them how to use AI. Don't tell them about this show because you want them to be left behind, right? You want them to be poor in the future. But if you like them, tell them about this show and how to make best use of AI and how to use these tools to be as versatile and as productive and as adaptive as you can be as we move into this crazy, hyper-accelerating technological future. It's going to be a wild ride. So thank you guys so much for listening, and I will catch you on the next episode. Until then, everybody, take it easy, guys. Don't forget to share this show out and leave a review on your favorite podcast app. It is a wonderful and incredibly helpful free way to support this show. Thank you for listening.